Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. No red hen for you. Sarah Huckabee Sanders and the Shame Mob in Lexington, Virginia. Over the weekend, take your calls, 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 64636DA, turnkey.pro text line. Is this a case where politics has been taken too far, or are you on the side of private property rights and the business owner? You don't have to serve who you don't want to serve, at least with respect to their ideological viewpoint.
Really? I mean, so she can't file a lawsuit against them? For them kicking her out?
Private property. She's not a protected class. It wasn't based on her race or gender, or it was based on
where she works.
Her political ideology, her job. That's right. Stephanie Wilkinson, who, by the way, BA from Dartmouth. So you knew there was going to be trouble.
Oh, okay, right.
Stephanie Wilkinson's the owner of Red Hen. She told the Washington Post, "I'm not a huge fan of confrontation. I have a business and I want the business to thrive. However, this feels like a moment in our democracy when people have to make uncomfortable actions and decisions to uphold their morals." She called the Trump White House inhumane and unethical, and so that's why she asked Sarah Huckabee Sanders and her party of seven to exit stage left from Red Hen when she sat down and held a plebiscite of her employees who agreed with her that Sarah Sanders and company must go.
And yeah, you're right. It was on a Friday night. And Sarah Sanders responded, "Last night I was told by the owner of Red Hen in Lexington, Virginia, to leave because I work for president. And I politely left. Her actions say far more about her than about me. I always do my best to treat people, including those I disagree with, respectfully, and will continue to do so." And, of course, the laugh, like CNN this morning, was almost celebrating her getting kicked out of this restaurant because they took to task this. "I do my best to treat people, including those I disagree with, respectfully," because they say that she doesn't treat the press corps respectfully.
Has she kicked anybody out of the White House press room? I don't think so.
No, she hasn't.
That's political battle. That's right. A very different thing than what we're talking about here in a restaurant. Well, of course it's being celebrated. I don't know. This is like striking a blow for the resistance. That's how they view it.
Kristen Nielsen, she just got kicked out. Well, she didn't get kicked out, but she was in that nice high-end Mexican restaurant, and the owner didn't kick her out, but protesters made it so uncomfortable for her to stay that she had to leave.
And Pam Bondi.
What happened to her?
She's the Attorney General of Virginia. She went to see the Mr. Rogers documentary at a local movie theater where she lives in Florida. And, by the way, which I highly recommend.
Yes, the movie. And moving to Florida. But
exactly. It's true. Go if you want
to see this.
The best place to see Do You Want to Be My Neighbor? Florida.
Florida. Okay.
Here's Pam Bondi, the Attorney General of Florida, Trump supporter, getting shamed out of the theater. So they pulled the Fred Rogers card.
Oh, Oh my gosh, that is so awful.
And if you watch the video, what you see is she's being escorted out by a phalanx of police officers, and then you have a couple of moviegoers following them and shouting at her, as you heard. What do you think of that?
312-642-5600. Is this the new normal? I mean, if you don't agree with somebody politically, you're just going to shame them out of a restaurant, shame them out of a movie theater. What's next?
Bob in Jefferson Park.
Yeah, good morning. So I have a question. If the wedding cake makers, the whole case that went to the Supreme Court, if they had instead just asked them if they were a Democrat, could they have stopped making the wedding cake for that reason?
Yes.
Versus the
yes, they could have. I'm serious.
Oh, how funny. This is going to evolve great. I'm going to love it.
Thanks for the call, Bob. I mean, again, remember, being a Republican or Democrat is not a protected class under the law the way that discriminating based on race or gender or sexual orientation in most jurisdictions, it's not the same thing. So you can... You know, you have the right to refuse service within a narrow realm in 2018 America, and this would be part of that narrow realm.
Well, social media has, on their Yelp review for the Red Hen, has pretty much been destroyed, which is fine. That's, you know, everyone could weigh in. I love Sarah Huckabee Sanders' dad, though. He wrote bigotry on the menu at Red Hen Restaurant, or you can ask for the hate plate.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if I like the... I know what Mike Huckabee is doing, using the left's rhetoric against them to kind of expose their hypocrisy. I get it. But hey, you know, you don't want to serve. I mean, and Sarah Sanders, to her credit, she's like, fine. That's fine. We'll leave.
Yeah.
There's no scene. You don't want to serve me because I'm a conservative? Fine.
But seven people, that's a lot of money that walked out the door.
Well,
and they're big tippers.
Yeah, but here's the thing. This is what I don't, you know, people just kind of don't think this thing through. They just have an emotional reaction. Mm-hmm. Milton Friedman, right? He famously had this exchange. Well, he's had multiple exchanges on this general topic. But one is, like, do you understand with these laws, you're protecting the discriminator against the non-discriminator? In other words, right, if somebody wants to sell only shoes to liberals or to... only wants to sell shoes to black people. Let's say that.
Okay.
And you're going to say, well, that's discriminatory. That's bigotry. You shall, you're a public place of accommodation, restaurant, retail stuff. You shall sell to all. Well, you're protecting that ignorant business owner against the non-ignorant business owner who is in business to make money and sell shoes to whoever comes in the door. Why would you want to protect them? I want to impose a cost for ignorant discrimination. And those who want to always impose rules protect the very ignorance they seek to root out. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Well, nobody else does.
No, I understand what you're saying.
Well, I know you do. Nobody else does.
Oh, yeah,
just,
nobody.
Just you and me.
Just nobody.
And Milton Friedman, and he's passed.
Oh, too soon.
And probably Mike Scott, he gets it. Chris and Aurora, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
All right, Dan, I know for sure that I've said this to you a year ago, and I believe I said it to you the last time 4 months ago, and I'm going to say it again today. We are headed toward a civil war. And if we could go somehow on a time machine and go back to the beginning of our first civil war, it started on little things like this, where there were skirmishes like this, where people would kick people out of places because they didn't agree. And here we are now, and I'm telling you, this is just the beginning, and we're going to look back to these days when we're finally entrenched, literally entrenched, fighting this out.
Thanks for the call, Chris. Well, I mean, is this the beginning of a civil war, and is that necessarily a bad thing? We'll pick it up.
This is the Morning Show. More Chicago radio listeners are choosing. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. We were talking about the Sarah Sanders incident over the weekend at the Red Hen in Lexington, Virginia, where she was kicked out for being conservative. And the question we're kind of batting around is, should conservatives picket the Red Hen and other restaurants owned by Dartmouth English Lit majors, or just patronize conservative eateries?
I mean, Lexington's a three-hour drive from the Capitol. And
I took a family out for a little country drive and wound up at this farm-to-table restaurant. Maxine Waters, No Justice, No Peace, Maxine.
Oh, she's celebrating this, too.
Oh, yeah. Now she's No Peace, No Sleep, Maxine.
Oh,
she's
no.
calling on the hordes to continue the treatment of Trump administration officials that has been visited upon Sarah Sanders and Kristen Nielsen.
Already, you have members of your cabinet that have been booed out of restaurants. Yeah. Who have protesters taking up at their house. Yeah. Who sang no peace, no sleep. Yeah. No peace, no sleep. And guess what? We're going to win this battle because while you try and quote the Bible, Jeff Sessions and others, you really don't know the Bible. God is on our side.
All right. So Maxine Waters, No Justice, No Peace, Maxine, this Dartmouth English Lit major, they're on a mission from God. Robert in Oak Brook here on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Yeah, real quick to your point, can you imagine if me, a white person, walked into a San Francisco restaurant or wherever she lives, and I try to shout her out, I guarantee I'd be arrested.
Yeah, I guarantee you're right. Thanks for the call, Robert. Frank in St. Charles.
Yeah, good morning. It's probably like what the other guy said. If Maxine Waters was kicked out for her vicious attacks on Trump, she'd be screaming racism, even though it had nothing to do with race. That's their knee-jerk reaction.
Well, that's right. Let me ask you this, Frank. I mean, you know, one of the things that may that this may provide some impetus for is looking at who you support with your hard-earned dollar. I try to do this. Look for the conservative proprietors of various goods and services that I purchase. I want to support those that are ideologically aligned as best I can. And so if the left wants to do that, however offensively, is that a problem?
Well, no, it isn't. But I do you think Sarah Huckabee has a right to sue them based on her creed is a protected class? And her creed is her beliefs. She was kicked out for her beliefs. I think she ought to sue them, but I know she won't.
Yeah.
Well, that's
thanks
what I suggested
for the call,
earlier,
Frank.
But you told me.
Well, she wasn't kicked out because she's a Christian. She was kicked out because she's a member of the Trump administration. So that's not exactly a protected belief system for the purposes of litigation. But we'll continue kicking this around. I mean, in the next 10 minutes, I'm sure somebody's going to be refused, some conservative, some Trump administration official. Probably Jeff Sessions is not going to be allowed at the breakfast counter.
Exactly.
So we'll have that story as soon as it happens.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Hey, Joe Walsh here. We will talk about anything but immigration when freedom returns at 5.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. We're talking about Sarah Sanders getting booted from the Red Hen. Conservatives are not welcome. And text from 773, all conservatives should go into that restaurant, order a cup of tea, sit for over an hour, and not tip. After a week, all the wait staff will leave and the place will go bankrupt. Is that,
is that what we
should do, a subversive guerrilla strategy of that sort? Or should we just patronize eateries owned by conservatives, welcoming people? Is this refusal of service, this public shaming, chasing Nielsen out of a restaurant, refusing service to Sanders, chasing Pam Bondi, Attorney General of Florida, out of a movie theater, Seth Rogen refusing to take a picture with Paul Ryan's kids?
Oh, my gosh. Are you serious?
Yeah. Is this
the new normal?
Well, and is this the beginning of armed conflict in the streets of an ideological nature? Not the normal armed conflict on the streets you see in Chicago.
And real quick, have you ever eaten at a farm-to-table restaurant?
Sure, I have. I'm a sophisticate.
Well, okay. Well, is it fresher? Like, what's the draw? Did you like it?
You get to know. I mean,
did you ever chicken see before you kill it?
Yeah, you go out to visit the chicken. Say you get to learn kind of all about its upbringing.
Yeah, you meet the mom and dad, and then you kill the chicken. So it's from farm to table.
It's a holistic. experience. I mean, you don't experience the same Weltanschauung at a normal restaurant. You don't get that at Chick-fil-A. You get that at the Red Hen.
That's It's fine dining. Out there.
And plus, you have to have at a minimum of a BA from an Ivy League school to go to a farm-to-table restaurant. Dan and Addison, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hi. I saw that article on Drudge, so I linked to it. I read the story. And I don't know, somewhere in, they had a picture of the sign on this restaurant. It's sort of like in the medieval days.
Yeah, the Hammer and Sickle.
Right. Yeah, on the red hand, it was a cutout of a chicken painted red. And in the middle of it, they had a gold hammer and sickle.
Right.
And I just thought, you know, there you go. I mean, my God. These leftists, they don't reflect that communism or leftism has been a total failure. We now have a 100-year history of that. You cannot point to one single country that has ever been successful under leftism.
Well, not yet, Dan. I mean, the point is it's just the wrong people have been in charge. But they're going to get it right. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. They're going to get it right, all the Ivy League BAs, like Miss Wilkinson, the owner of the Red Hen. Yeah, I mean, again, the irony, by the way, of celebrating communism while practicing capitalism is lost on her, even though she's a Dartmouth grad.
Yeah, well, this Dartmouth grad gave an interview to the Washington Post. Did you read it? Her phone rang at 8 p.m. It was the chef at the Red Hen, the tiny farm-to-table restaurant that she co-owned.
Assume, by the way, the farm is an agrarian co-op consistent with communist
Well, the chef
orthodoxy.
Called her and said, quote, the staff is a little concerned. What should we do? Sarah Sanders is here. The reservation was made in her husband's name. And she said she'd be down there right away to see if it's true.
She was initially concerned they weren't going to have enough food.
Oh, and that, you stop. That's not true. And then she said, you know, because the population of Lexington is 7,000 and the majority had voted against President Trump. Oh,
Tony,
so she knew she had to jump into action, get in her car and go to the restaurant.
Tony on the South Side.
Good morning, Dan. Good morning, Amy. You know what? Every time I hear talk of Civil War, I'm amused by it. If it ever came down to an armed conflict, I'll tell you what side's going to win. The side that's going to win is going to be the constitutional loving Second Amendment people. That's how quick that war is going to be over. So bring it on, the left. If they really want a civil war and they want armed conflict in the streets, I'd be down for that. Sure, why not?
All right, Tony, on the South Side's in. Thanks for the call.
Listen to this, too. She knew the community was deeply divided over such issues as the Confederate flag. She knew, she said, that her restaurant and its half dozen servers and cooks had managed to stay in business for 10 years by keeping politics off the menu. But then she goes and does this and cites the Confederate flag.
These are different times. These are different times. You've got to make a moral stand. That's what she said. By the way, also, after the Nielsen incident and some of these others, the acting deputy secretary of Homeland Security warned Homeland Security employees on Saturday there may be a heightened threat against them. As this is CBS News reporting. The assessment is based on specific and credible threats that have been levied against certain DHS employees and a sharp increase in the overall number of general threats against DHS employees. In addition, over the last few days, thousands of employees have had their personally identifiable information publicly released on social media. So a lot of doxing going on as well.
They had a cheese board in front of them when Wilkinson arrived, and she huddled the servers together and the workers. And most of her employees, she said, are gay. And they knew that Sanders had defended Trump's desire to bar transgender people from the military. So they're already eating, and then she walks up to them and asks her to leave.
Miss Wilkinson, tear down that cheese board.
She said she was wearing a black dress, and there was an elderly couple with them, and then a few men and a few women. I mean, are you kidding me? Excuse me. You're going to have to leave. Oh, she's already eating a cheese board.
Since this is largely a reaction to the last week's hysteria over administration immigration policy, it is worth noting, according to a press release from CPB, Customs and Border Protection, 522 illegal immigrant children have been reunited with their families who were initially separated as a result of the zero tolerance policy. The reunions of an additional 16 unaccompanied alien children were scheduled for over this weekend, but delayed due to weather affecting travel. We expect they'll be reunited with their parents within 24 hours. And so this is the reunification of the 2,000 children is happening as quick as possible under the law and per the executive order. Although Mike McCaul was on with Chris Wallace over the weekend. Mike McCaul is the chairman of the Homeland Security Committee in the House. And with respect to, you know, how the zero tolerance policy against the backdrop of the Trump's executive orders playing out, is still a little bit murky. I think everybody's still, you know, scrambling to try and address this separation issue and the reunification issue.
Do you know whether adults, members of families crossing the border illegally can and are still being prosecuted under zero tolerance?
That was a plan. They violated the law. They're being prosecuted.
Now we hear some of these people are being dismissed.
I have heard recent reports now that may be, that policy may be revisited and it may not go forward.
Zero tolerance?
That's some of the reporting I'm getting. And it's very unclear how this executive order is playing out, but I'm unclear about now the prosecution of the parents. I think they want to reunite the family and then remove them from the country.
Yeah, so it's a little murky, and so what could very well be happening is reuniting the family and releasing the family,
right,
not deporting the family, which, you know, was essentially what was going on up until the Trump administration, up until this past week, which is, after 20 days, these children are being released into the American population.
Right.
And so, as we said last week when he signed this executive order, what you're doing is getting us back into the catch-release paradigm. That's what the president did. It was a cave. And that's what's happening, even though the idea of reunifying the kids with the parents is a laudable one. Drew and Morris, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hey, good morning, guys. I just wanted to say that, you know, as far as like the gas gauge of politics is concerned, I don't think that kicking Sarah Sanders out of a restaurant is going to tick any, you know, voters towards the left. I think that if anything, and I think it's a completely neutral issue. I don't think anybody really cares in the big scheme of things. I don't think that's going to affect voters whatsoever. But if anything, it might have gained one or two supporters for the Trump administration.
Yeah, well,
and there's more information I have to share.
Thanks for the call, Drew. But just on Drew's point,
yes,
that's Wall Street Journal editorial over the weekend. How to reelect Trump. The message, now you're so deplorable, they won't serve you in their restaurants. It's not Sarah Sanders specifically or Kristen Nielsen specifically. It's what it represents about the left's attitude to people with whom they disagree, to members of the Trump administration, to Trump voters. You're so deplorable, they won't serve you in restaurants. So actually, this overreach, which we continue to see from the left, only serves to rally people around the Trump flag, so to speak. And so this, I think, is a net benefit to Trump. I think that's how it's going to play out. And you've seen that happening with respect to the generic ballot, looking ahead to November with congressional races as well.
So you have to listen to this. So the owner then said that she was tense as she approached the table. Astor said, "Hi, I'm the owner. I'd like you to come out to the patio with me for a word." And she said she was babbling a little, but she got her point across.
Yeah.
She said, "I explained that the restaurant has certain standards that I feel we have to uphold, such as honesty, compassion, cooperation." She said she was surprised Sarah Sanders did not. She said, "That's fine, I'll go." They offered her group, "You guys can stay if you want, but she's got to leave." And the whole group got up and they said they were going to pay for the cheese board and some wine. And I'm not sure if it was wine, I shouldn't say that, but drinks. And the owner said, "No, it's on us."
Oh, that's
great. They got up and left.
That's very thoughtful.
Yeah.
Listen to Dan and Amy on your smartphone. Download the AM560 mobile app today at 560theanswer.com/mobile. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. Are you excited that we're stripping away the veneer on civility in the political realm in the age of Trump and getting right after each other? like happened at this Red Hen restaurant in Lexington, Virginia. Question for Miss Wilkinson, Red Wilkinson, let's call her.
Yes.
You get the Red Hen, you get the Red.
Red Wilkinson. Okay.
She's a commie. She's a Dartmouth grad.
Well, tell people why she's a commie.
Well, she threw Sarah Sanders and her party out on Friday night of her restaurant because allowing her and her group to eat at the Red Hen in Lexington, Virginia was not consistent with her stated morals. So the question is, I mean, if these are your stated beliefs, perhaps, Red Wilkinson, you'd be willing to allow the federal government to remake your restaurant into a DHS family reunification center.
Oh, yeah.
What about that? Because, I mean, again, according to her stated philosophy, from each according to their means. You have these means. The government, which, of course, you genuflect before, has these needs. You are very concerned about humane policy. She characterized the Trump White House's immigration policy as inhumane and unethical. So.
And that her community is deeply divided over such issues as the Confederate flag.
Well, this would be a way to bring the community together around making the Red Hen, formerly the Red Hen, a DHS family reunification center.
It's a 26-seat restaurant in rural Kentucky.
Well, it is for
rural
now.
Virginia, excuse me.
You know who would be good to run the Red Hen Family Reunification Center?
Who?
Alyssa Milano. Oh. Bring her down from New York. Have her run the Red Hen Family Reunification Center.
What do you think about that? Remember after Hurricane Katrina, they asked people all over the country to take people in from New Orleans? And I actually interviewed a woman from Tulane because I have an extra bedroom in my basement. And I was going to have her live there. So why don't we do that with these families? Ask Americans, hey, who wants to open up their doors? If you have a spare bedroom, bring in a family, mom, dad, kid, or maybe just a mom and the child, and have them stay there until their court hearing. Feed them, clothe them, take care of them, and then drive them to their court hearing and see what happens.
Yeah.
I mean, that sounds like a good idea. We did it after Hurricane Katrina. We should do it now.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's still 502 kids were reunited with their parents over the weekend.
1,000 migrants coming from Central America a month.
1,000?
Mm-hmm. 1,000 families. Whew. Yeah. There's these kind of woozy, magical thoughts about how this is all going to work out. And then there's the actual reality on the ground. And the two shall never meet with respect to Red Wilkinson and her ilk. Interestingly, did you see this? David Lynch, you know, the Twin Peaks creator.
Yeah.
Donald Trump could go down as one of the greatest presidents in history.
Wow.
He said this in an interview with The Guardian. Because he's disrupted the thing so much, talking about the political establishment. No one is able to counter this guy in an intelligent way. And it's not that necessarily Lynch is some conservative or Trumpian. He's just describing what he's seeing. Our so-called leaders can't take the country forward. Can't get anything done like children they are. Trump has shown all of this. He's basically said that Trump's rise has pointed out how flawed the system is and politicians have been, which has opened the door for other better political outsiders. I'm not really a political person, but I like the freedom to do what you want to do, said Lynch, even though he was a Bernie Sanders voter in the Democrat primary over Hillary Clinton. So this is sort of, this disruptive influence that Trump has. And the reaction doesn't protect the establishment. It just further disintegrates it. It further disrupts. Dan Hannan, our friend, MEP, member of the European Parliament, until Brexit, from Runnymede in England, had a good piece in Washington Examiner about the mob, the shame mob, as we're seeing on display. The worst thing is not the mob, it's the cowardice that we display before the mob, writes Hannan. In every age, some people have formed gangs to persecute deviants or heretics. It seems to be in our genes, a hangover perhaps from our hunter-gatherer days when commitment to the kinship was a survival trait. The internet didn't create the problem. What it's done is make us more pusillanimous, even when we know that the mob is misdirected. the mob, the shame mob in the digital age, with the ubiquitous access to be an internet tough guy, right? Anonymous tweets and Facebook posts and stuff. Big tough guy on the internet. It's allowed us to be more cowardly. Do you think that's right? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. 64636-DA, turnkey.pro text line. I'm not going to engage in a public way for fear of shaming. I'm just going to go write a nasty Yelp review anonymously. Right?
Yeah, that's what people are doing. But, I mean, the fact that she was seated with her husband and six other people, and they were eating a cheese board, and then the woman asked to speak to her on the patio, gave her the news, and then said the rest of her party can stay, but she had to leave, please.
So they left.
It's shameful, but it's disgraceful. There's no need for that.
Well, here's the thing.
I mean, they were well-behaved. Yeah, they're just sitting there eating.
Here's the thing. Don't you want the false civility stripped away? Ambrose Bierce in the Devil's Dictionary. Politics is a strife of interest masquerading as a contest of principles. So, you know, get rid of the high-minded principles, which most people do not have, particularly inside the political arena, that it is a strife of interest. You know, it's the old Dennis Miller line about, you know, when the senators refer to my good friend from Montana, they're really saying that jack off over there that I can't stand. Mm-hmm. It's all false civility. So should we indulge false civility, or should we just strip it away and say, oh, you got a problem with me? I got a problem with you. Let's hash it out. Rhetorically, preferably. But stop pretending like, you know, we're on the same page. We're drinking buddies. We have different perspectives. Politicians have different interests they're representing. So why not just be forthright about it, as opposed to the veneer of civility with the barbarism bubbling just below the surface, which is what actually is occurring. Oh, let's just be nice to one another. Oh, let's be nice. Everybody will be nice. And then they'll go to their respective places and do some very not nice things. How about confront the facade?
Well, she should have told her, because she didn't tell her that most of her employees are gay. And her gay employees
Who
knew
cares?
That Sanders defended Trump's desire to ban transgenders from the military. Well, she should have said that rather than, you know, we don't believe what exactly did she say?
She called the Trump administration unethical and inhumane, the immigration policy. It's not consistent with our morals. This is a time to stand for, you know, your belief in democracy. It's an odd thing for, you know, a Dartmouth English lit major to say. But who cares what she says? And who cares that she kicked Sarah Sanders and her party out? We're just going to do like the kind of moral indignation. Everybody's always trying to be more morally indignant than the next guy.
Have you ever been kicked out of a place?
No. Because I'm a delight to have as a patron. Dan in Libertyville, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
I find it rather ironic that Hillary Clinton went on a rampage about how the election was not going to be accepted by those deplorables that support Trump, and that there was going to be, you know, demonstrations in the street and social unrest. And yet this is exactly what Hillary's followers are doing.
Yeah, but the question is, should we embrace it or should we, you know, heap scorn on it?
Well, the idea of embracing it is going to lead to violence in the street.
Why?
That's never a good thing.
Well, why does it necessarily lead to violence? You don't want me to go to your restaurant?
Well,
fine.
Look at Antifa. What did they do? Well, what did the people in Berkeley do with the pepper spray? You start pepper spraying a guy that's concealed carrying, he's going to shoot you dead.
Well, wait a second. You're mixing apples and orange orchards.
It's a fact. What happened in Berkeley?
No. Wait a second. I'm talking about refusal of service at a restaurant. I'm not talking about violence in the streets. Yeah, if Antifa commits an act of violence, then they can expect violence in return. That's a different story. I'm talking about, generally speaking, hey, get out of my restaurant. Get out of my shoe store. Get out of my retail shop. Okay, fine. I will. Well, let's just strip it all away. so we know where everybody stands, which side of the skirmish line you're on. What's wrong with that?
I don't have any problem with that. As a matter of fact, I do it.
Oh, all right.
I went to the Deerfield Village Board meeting when they were trying to strip us of our constitutional rights, and I chewed them out and called them bureaucrats, the very bureaucrats that Thomas Jefferson warned us about. But my point is, things have gotten topsy-turvy. Illegal aliens, people are demanding to have the right to enter. People who are somehow working with a public official are being deported from restaurants. Things have gone topsy-turvy, and it's very uncomfortable.
Okay,
yeah,
thanks for
what you did there. Yeah.
Deported from the Red Hen.
Could you see conservatives kicking out liberals? Or, I mean, was that because... You know, also that Baker didn't bake the cake.
Sean from Elmwood Park kicks socialists out of his cigar shop all the time.
Really?
Yeah. So what? You come in
before
with
they buy a cigar.
You come
or
in
after?
With a Bernie Sanders shirt on at the Elmer Cigar Shop, and you get thrown out. What's wrong with that? And you get
What else?
And you get ridiculed in the process.
Oh, okay.
So what's wrong with that?
Well, come on.
What do you mean,
some
come on?
Decorum. What? He doesn't know. I mean, does he really kick if he wears?
Yes. So what? It's my private property. It's my business. We have an ideological disagreement because you're a plunderer and I'm not, and I don't want you to avail yourself of my goods or services. What's wrong with that? As opposed to this, again, this imposed civility that is fake. Let's get honest. Jim on 94. Hey, Jim. Jim on 94.
Jim
on 94 has departed. Andy on 88. Try a different expressway.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. How are you guys this morning?
Morning.
Good.
Yeah, I think you're right. Take the mask off. We can do it by, I think, posting some signs in businesses. We refuse the right, or we reserve the right to refuse service, mm-hmm. and list who that would be. That would make our choices easier.
Yeah. And I like that. Thanks for the comment. And here's the other thing. I'll wear the Scarlet C. I mean, instead of making it something that's imposed, let's celebrate it. Let's put a little C on our lapels
for conservative.
Yeah. And let's walk around loudly and proudly and see what happens.
I'd like to keep my volunteer job.
Yeah, well, that's the cowardice that Dan Hannon's talking about.
Yeah, probably so.
Dennis in Villa Park.
Give me a year.
Yeah, the difference between the conservatives and the liberals are is that conservatives just leave the place because they were asked to leave. The liberals will have to try and sue them or have them arrested or prosecuted some way. That's why people get really upset.
No, I know. I get it. But we don't want to be the liberals. Right? Right?
Yeah, but, well, the point I think the other fellow was trying to make is that they just will not stop until they grind you into the ground, which causes you to want to react back.
No.
You know, you can only take skin slaps so many times.
No, that's...
You know, when they say, turn the other cheek, I only got two.
Well, thanks for the call, Dennis. No, that's right, but that's what I'm saying. So, rather than turning the other cheek, as it were, is slap back. You want me out? I'm out. I'm going to focus on patronize on giving my business to the ideologically aligned. I'm going to wear a C on my lapel. If you don't have a C, then we know you're not a conservative. I mean, let's just balkanize the place and let's get to it. And if results in some confrontations, well, maybe those will be clarifying. Mike on the north side.
Dan, I will never wear a red C on anything
I didn't say red.
I own.
I didn't say red.
Well, a lot of people see the Scarlet and think it's red, and it'll be that other baseball team.
Well, I was forget using it. An analogy. Yes, right. Yes,
but, you know,
right.
I had a couple of solutions, nonviolent solutions to your problem, but you just inspired me with another one. I'm going to put on a WCPT T-shirt. I'm going to go sit in Sean cigar store in Elmhurst, and I'm not going to buy anything. I'm going to have a soy milk, and I'm going to ask to use the bathroom. He doesn't know what I look like, so he'll think I'm some disgruntled college student.
Thanks for the call, Mike. Yeah, that is a good idea.
Try it.
Yeah,
a good experiment.
That WCP, you won't even have a chance to enjoy that soy milk if you walk in with the WCPT
soy
hat on.
Milk.
David and McCook.
Hey, good morning, guys. I was just going to mention, where's the public outcry against this, like with the gay couple with the cake thing? I think Sarah Sanders should sue that restaurant.
Mm-hmm. Well, why? What's the basis?
Well, that's what the left would do. Where's the catchphrase, the outrage? We're outraged about this.
Yeah, thanks.
Sorry. I asked you that at the beginning of the show. Could she sue them? What would the basis for a lawsuit
I don't think there's a basis for it. And even if there is, I mean, is that what you want to do? Then we're playing on their side of the field, aren't we? We're going to litigate everything. We're going to be morally indignant. We're going to be our own outrage mob. Why don't we do something different? That's how you shift the paradigm. Otherwise, we're just fueling this scam that they're running on the other side. I mean, don't adopt their tactics. You can use their tactics to undermine them to shift the paradigm. But what so many people are talking about is and how they're reacting is the same way the left that would react.
I got to tell you, though, her approaching their table after they've already been served their appetizers and asking her to step outside on the patio, I would not have done that. Like, if you want to talk to me here in front of everybody.
Okay.
I mean,
I want you to leave here in front of everybody. Then
yeah,
what?
That would be better than pulling her outside, telling her how she feels, because everyone cares about their feelings so much. If you're a business owner, you suck it up, Buttercup. That's a table of eight. That's a lot of money. And you have a 26-seat restaurant? I know, I just wouldn't have done it. I would not have done it.
You would not have kicked her out, or no. You would not have left? Would you have gotten into
Ooh.
A physical altercation?
Ooh.
Would you have said, you have to drag me from here? Would you have chained yourself to the cheese board? What would you have done?
I think I would have stayed. I honestly think I would have stayed.
Well, then they would have had you removed, and you would have been arrested again.
Again.
You've made the switch, and it feels so good. You've switched to Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy, and did you catch this? Probably not, because there hasn't been much reporting on it. So there's a lot of outrage over the law being enforced against illegal immigrants, and none about the law not being enforced on behalf of American citizens. Judicial Watch, the shadow Department of Justice during the Obama administration, released on Friday newly obtained internal IRS documents, including material revealing that Senator John McCain's former staff director and chief counsel on the Senate Homeland Security Permanent Subcommittee, his name's Henry Koerner, you got Koerner and Lerner, Henry Koerner urged top IRS officials, including Lois Lerner, you remember her, the director of the tax-exempt organizations processing who pled the fifth and was never brought to justice. Koerner urged her and others to audit conservative groups, to audit so many that it becomes financially ruinous, to audit for the purposes of ruining conservative organizations applying for C3 status, nonprofit status.
To harass them.
It's a little bit more than harass when you're trying to take them out and you're the IRS, which is, you know, the most weaponized non-military agency in the federal government. April 30th, 2013, Koerner recommends maybe the solution is to audit so many that it is financially ruinous. Lerner responded that it's her job to oversee it all. The IRS scandal, I mean, you want to talk about agencies that have lost standing for equal justice under the law. We've talked so much about the intelligence agencies in the last year and a half. Remember the IRS? Remember targeting American citizens based on their political and religious beliefs? And John Koskinen, it took, frankly, Trump forever to replace him. He finally replaced him. He wasn't impeached. He wasn't
charged
criminally. Lois Lerner pleads the fifth. She's never charged criminally. Nobody is ever brought to justice at IRS. Targeting American citizens based on their political and religious beliefs. Everybody wants to get up in arms about Red Hen. That's a private organization. How about if you want to direct your outrage somewhere, how about the federal government, the IRS, throwing you, proverbially throwing you out of a restaurant, proverbially targeting you for your beliefs. I mean, this is incredible. And I like a little bit of a reckoning from John McCain per his staffer there, Henry Koerner, being in on with this cabal to target Americans and organizations based on those political and religious beliefs. This is what should be headlining the news, not Sarah Huckabee Sanders at Red Hen. But of course it isn't.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
You want more than just the headlines? Find out what's going on and what it means with me, Dennis Prager, this morning at 11, right here on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. Chris Wallace's program on Sunday featured a couple of good interviews. We played a clip from House Homeland Security Committee Chairman Mike McCaul earlier. He also pulled back in Obama's Department of Homeland Security Secretary Jay Johnson, who was reminded of what the Obama administration policy was, and Jay Johnson embraced it.
Without a doubt, the images and the reality from 2014, just like 2018, are not pretty. And so we expanded family detention. We had then 34,000 beds for family detention, only 95 of 34,000 equipped to deal with families. So we expanded it. I freely admit it was controversial. We believed it was necessary at the time. I still believe it is necessary to maintain a certain capability for families. We can't have catch and release. And in my 3 years, we deported or repatriated or returned over a million people.
So, by the way, so those just coming to this issue because they're just paying attention because it's Trump and the D.C. press corps is whipping them into a frenzy. The policy under President Obama and President Bush before him and Jay Johnson is saying that's the right call and it's a difficult situation and catch and release doesn't work, which is what we've reverted back to because of Trump's executive order and the lack of a congressional fix to this juncture. And Jay Johnson went further in this discussion of catch and release to explain why it doesn't work. Give those people that are just emoting some of the data so they understand the scope of the problem and thus the complications associated with any proposed solution.
The practical result of the program that the Obama administration put in was that you had to release. You caught and had to release some of the people with a promise and sometimes an ankle bracelet that they would come back. I want to put up some numbers on the screen because according to government numbers, 74% of those who were released showed up for their hearings last year. But that still left almost 40,000 people who didn't show up for deportation hearings. So catch and release, which is what the practical effect was under the Obama administration and until this year for the Trump administration, that doesn't really work either, does it?
Well, without a doubt, it's a problem, Chris, which is one of the reasons we expanded family detention, which was controversial.
And was knocked down by the court. That's the reason we got this 20-day ruling. It was because of the Obama administration's policy.
Well, we expanded family detention. And then we ran into the issue of the Flores case, which you mentioned a moment ago. I disagreed then with the ruling in the Flores case because I think that our Border Patrol and our immigration enforcement people need those tools available to deal with situations like this. But it's a sheer matter of numbers, Chris. Right now, we have family detention capability for about 3,000 or 4,000 people. And you've got over 1,000 migrants crossing the border a day in Central America. And so even if you emptied it out completely today, it would fill back up in a matter of days.
Right. Yeah, I think I misspoke. I said 1,000 a month earlier. 1,000 a day. 1,000 a day. That's the scope of the problem. So you want to direct your hysteria Jay Johnson's way, no justice, no peace, Maxine, and the rest of the leftists and the CNN and the cable news networks? I mean, there's the level-headed reality on the ground from a former Homeland Security Secretary, the same reality on the ground that Kristen Nielsen and the Trump administration are facing. Now propose something, left, and frankly, Republicans in the House and Senate, move something on the topic. For more on both, we're pleased to be joined by our friend Mike Gallagher, host of the eponymous Mike Gallagher Show, which follows our show weekdays 9 to 11 on these airwaves. Mike, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Greetings from the Rio Grande Valley, or the RGV, as they call it around these parts.
Yeah.
From West Laco, Texas.
Yeah, you're stalking Melania Trump, as we understand it.
Actually, yesterday I stalked Elizabeth Warren, and it was an awkward moment because as she was holding her usual press conference and carrying on outside a family detention center about 2 miles from where I'm sitting right now. And of course, she was surrounded by a scrum of cameras and reporters and expressing her deep concerns and, all the usual Democrat talking points. I was so tempted to just start yelling, Pocahontas, Pocahontas, Pocahontas. I thought, they'll drag me out of here. I won't be able to broadcast on Monday. But it was interesting to see the little press event there. But guys, it has been an amazing journey. I mean, I've been taken all around the border. I've had a great, great tour of McAllen. I did go to where Mrs. Trump visited the other day when she appeared with that peculiar jacket at the immigrants' children's processing center, and got to see that. I've been to a couple of family detention centers. I went into Mexico yesterday. I did some of my pre-recording from the Mexican side of the border
and some shopping,
going back and forth. Yeah, I did some shopping. Got some souvenirs for you guys.
Yep.
I brought Amy back a little. Brought Amy a little sombrero, sombrero piggy bank, and brought you some cigars, Dan.
Thank you very much.
Well, what is the feel? I mean, if you talk to the people in McAllen and the people in Mexico, how are they processing what's going on?
Well, I mean, this is a new problem. This is not a new problem for them, Amy. As you guys just mentioned, this has been happening for years. I think they're a little bit grateful that there's a big international media focus on this because they want this problem fixed. Now, make no mistake, this is a blue area. This, even though Texas is a red state, the border towns along the Mexican border are very blue. A lot of Mexicans who live on the Texas side. So they're not exactly going to have a bunch of, MAGA hats on or Trump for 2020 signs in their front yard. But having said that, many of them are recognizing that President Trump sort of inherited this problem. The family's being torn apart. I visited and interviewed Sister Norma, who runs Catholic Charities, and she went into business with her shelter and her facility in 2014 because children were being separated from their parents. And so one of the big lies has been all this began under Donald Trump, and everybody here along the border knows full well it didn't. It's been going on for years.
Well, first,
and so that's one of the big misconceptions, Dan.
First of all, I want to congratulate you along with Melania Trump for visiting 100% more child detention centers than Michelle Obama did. So congratulations on that accomplishment, number one. Number two, what has the conversation been like with Border Patrol officers and DHS officials, particularly since they've been characterized as, Nazi guards at Auschwitz, basically, including from former CIA Director General Michael Hayden? I mean, the scorn that's been heaped indirectly on Border Patrol is really incredible. I'm sure they're not unaware of it.
They're not unaware of it, and these men and women happen to be very, very much in support of the president and the administration's policies. They know that this president, really has got their back, and they're very. This is a very. I will say this: all the men and women I spoke to who are Border Patrol and immigration authorities are very pro-Trump, very much grateful for these policies and for the attention that's now being focused. One thing that Trump always does. He guides the national conversation. He leads the dialogue. And let's face it, now we're having a very important conversation that we should have been having years ago about what we do with these families, what we do with the children, how we do this with compassion and humanity, but also enforce the law. And as you guys do every morning brilliantly, it's a complicated, multi-layered problem. What's not complicated is to see the pushback from the left, whether it's Sarah Sanders being kicked out of a restaurant in Virginia or Barron Trump being suggested to be put in a cage with pedophiles. And boy, that'll really show him.
Yeah.
Or Seth Rogen embarrassing Paul Ryan and his kids at an event and bragging about it later on TV. Those kinds of things that listen, as uncomfortable it is and as unpleasant, keep it coming, because the more Americans see how crazy the left is, the better chance we have of holding on to the House and the Senate in the midterm election.
Speaking of the left, I saw Elizabeth Warren's interview after she left that shelter, and she was, borderline in tears, saying the kids are there in cages, they're sleeping on floors. What have you seen when you visited these places?
I've seen kids play with toys, watch soccer, interact with doctors and with caring volunteers. There are many, many places along here that are not treating these kids with anything but kindness and love and care. And I was there at that press conference with Elizabeth Warren, and I thought, you know, you're seeing a lot of different things than I saw. I wish one of the reporters would have asked what CNN's own Brooke Baldwin asked Senator Tammy Baldwin last week on CNN. Maybe you guys saw that.
Yeah.
I mean, you talk about, Dan, deer in the headlights. Hey, where were you when this was happening in 2014? See these pictures of these kids under Mylar blankets and in cages? That was 2014. Did you speak out then? Remember Jackie Gleason on The Honeymooners? Humana, 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 humana. She had nothing to say. And nor would Elizabeth Warren. I'd like to find out. I'd like to locate quotes from Elizabeth Warren and speaking out vociferously against Barack Obama in 2014 when the same thing was happening. We all know it didn't happen. We all know it didn't happen. Now, you know, these people, I don't want to minimize this, guys. They're scared. They're afraid. Some of these kids are, many of these kids are unaccompanied minors whose parents have sent them through this grueling. One thing I've learned from being down here, this desert and the area, the crossing, the Rio Grande, I mean, guys, it's 98 sweltering degrees on a cool day. It's miserable. It's these are terrible conditions. So there's just a lot of anxiety. But the reaction has been an outpouring, I think, on the Texas side of love, of trying to help and try to do what's best for these kids and these families.
All right. He is Mike Gallagher. He's broadcasting live today, as you heard, from McAllen, Texas, at the U.S.-Mexico border. And he'll have more insights and first-person accounts of what he's seen and including with the people on the ground trying to deal with this situation humanely. Mike Gallagher, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate it.
Hey, Dan, Amy, always great being with you. Keep fighting the good fight, guys. Take care.
Take care.
Thank you. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
Connect with Dan and Amy using the AM560 mobile app. Download it today at 560theanswer.com/mobile.
Dan and Amy, I know the most handsome dog in the world is an Arubian Canuku named Hayek. The ugliest dog in the world, Amy?
Well, her name is Zsa Zsa, and she, of course, is a bulldog. She came from Minnesota. They drove all the way to California. It's the annual World's Ugliest Dog Contest. It's in Petaluma, California every year. And they judge on not only appearances but personality. And Zsa Zsa had a lot of that because she jumped up on the, not jumped up, but her owner put her on the judge's table and she went up to each judge and sniffed around. It was cute. I mean, she has crazy eyes, a crooked tail, a little bit of a weird walk, and she has a tongue that hangs out almost to the ground. It's about a foot long. It is, it's ugly, but she's,
and she adores a penthouse view, well, she's, as I understand.
Zsa Zsa, she's so ugly, she's cute.
Zsa Zsa's one of the coolest looking pups I've ever seen. I saw her picture and I just had to have her. Zsa Zsa, she came from a puppy mill in Missouri about, we adopted her maybe 4 years ago.
And they won $1,500.
No, the bulldog.
Consider the bulldog, a grotesque monstrosity born of relentless inbreeding, riddled with sinusitis, crippled by joint pain, chronically flatulent.
Oh, so true.
A kindly pet or humanity's cruelest mistake?
Uh-huh. The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. What about the children? Are they being reunited with their families? The answer is yes. Customs and Border Protection releasing a statement over the weekend. 522 unaccompanied alien children in their custody have been reunited with their parents. There's another 16 who are scheduled to be reunited, delayed due to weather affecting travel. And that's happening as well.
Sorry for interrupting, but United and American and Frontier are back on board now. Now they're going to help the government and reunite the children.
And understand what
so nice of them.
Understand what the policy is with Central American children and immigrants. The policy is that they separate the children from the parents, and then they look for a relative to locate the children, to house the children until the parents' case is adjudicated. This is why they're spread across the country for people who were unclear about, you know, how they're winding up in New York and Michigan and Illinois and elsewhere. So that's been the policy. That's the law. And it was, frankly, an amendment that was authored by Dianne Feinstein a decade ago. So just, you know, some infusion of an actual discussion of the law here, I think, is always useful. Not that it's the end-all, be-all. It's the basis. It's the start of the discussion. Whoa. This is the law, and then the discussion should be, is the law proper? Does it reflect our mores? Is it sensible? We can have that conversation, but at least let's understand what the baseline is.
And also, too, people should remember about 5% are here without any parents at all. Their parents gave money to a mule to take their kids across Mexico into the United States.
Yeah, and you have all kinds of instances documented where MS-13 gang members posed as minors, used kids to enter the U.S., illegally. So there is a legitimate border security physical safety threat posed by illegal immigration. I know this is sort of it should not be a controversial statement, but the hysteria that's being generated by the left and their handmaids in the D.C. press corps, it is a controversial statement. By Mike McCaul, Homeland Security Committee chairman in the House, was on with Chris Wallace over the weekend, and he talked about the efforts to reunify children with parents.
When are they going to be reunited with their parents?
I think it's a very difficult thing to do, and they're going to have to bring them back to the border where they should have been in the first place.
So we're talking weeks or months?
And be with their parents who violated the law, reunite them at the family center, and then go forward with the removal proceedings. But, Chris, as it exists now under the Flores decision, after 20 days, they are released into society. And these could be dangerous people. I'm not saying they all are. I think the children, because of HHS, they're put into their custody and transferred somewhere else in the country.
And in addition to McCaul explaining how this actually works, and former Obama Homeland Security Jay Johnson describing the same policy that he supported and that they expanded under Obama, against that backdrop of trying to have a sensible conversation on this topic, you have this from the D.C. press corps and this op-ed in Politico. I mean, listen, it is rare when you get a full appreciation for how unserious the D.C. press corps is in covering these issues. Rare when it crystallizes in a singular op-ed, but that's just what you have here. Stephen Miller, mm-hmm. who is, of course, an advisor to the president, and particularly on immigration-related policy, is the target of this op-ed. I sat on the other side of Stephen Miller's first wall. Are you ready for this? This is from a third-grade classmate of Stephen Miller.
A third grade?
Third grader.
Oh, yeah, because how close are we to those we went to third grade with? Okay.
It was the year he sat next to me in third grade, Stephen Miller's first wall. It's hard to say how much a kid's behavior in third grade can really tell you about the inner workings of his soul. But this guy, Jack Schaefer, is going to look into Stephen Miller's soul anyway.
Can you even name somebody you went to third grade with?
Yeah.
Oh, I've got Peter Bells and John Berta. What do you got?
Did you end up going to prom with both of them?
I know, but I ended up in several classes with them in Indian Grove and middle school and junior and high school.
I can name probably the entire third grade class.
Oh, my gosh. You probably even know your third grade teacher. Who was it? I know who mine was. Mine was Miss Zimbaroff.
Mrs. Martin.
Okay. All right. So, you can sort of relate to the story, but I wouldn't say if anyone would be building a wall in third grade, metaphorically. A wall around himself, Dan.
In third grade. Yes, exactly. Let me in, Stephen. Did you ever look into a fellow third grader's soul?
No, I didn't. I was reading books.
Mr. Schaefer continues.
Okay, I can't wait to hear this.
Surely the well-documented indicators of Miller's alt-right beginnings in middle school, high school, and college have less impressionistic connections to his current behavior, but here is what I remember. Because of our last name, Stephen and I shared a desk.
Oh, boy, here we go.
We were not friends, though we were not exactly enemies either. Mm-hmm. He goes on to say, it was difficult to make Stephen laugh. This feels dirty.
And
well,
it's like a forlorn love
or something. Right. It's so bizarre.
The friendship that got away.
I found him difficult to reach at all. Boy, this was a very introspective third grader, I got to tell you. And so it seemed did everyone else. How can we get to Stephen? Said the third graders.
Stephen, talk to someone. An ABC after school special.
Exactly. He was especially obsessed with tape and glue.
Oh my God.
This is how it starts.
Was he sniffing the glue and taping other people's mouths shut? That would be a problem, but okay. Tape and glue
are gateway products to xenophobia. Everyone knows this. Along the midpoint of our desk, Stephen laid down a piece of white masking tape, explaining that it marked the boundaries of our size and that I was not to cross it.
That's awesome. We don't want anybody's germs.
The formality of this struck me as odd. I was a fairly neat kid, at least in school, and I never spread my things to his side of the desk. Stephen, what are you doing to us? Stephen, meanwhile, could not have been much messier. His side of the desk was sticky and peeling, littered with scraps of paper, misshapen erasers, and pencil nubs. The horror of this.
Pencil nubs?
This is exactly what's happening at the border right now.
Pencil nubs?
We should have asked Mike
There's
Gallagher.
There's not even a band name, Pencil Nubs.
That would have been a good band name.
Pencil nubs.
What are the metaphorical, well, pencil nubs are a metaphor for what on the border, I wonder.
Cactus?
This is so deep. If this adhesive division kept Stephen on his side of the desk, I was all for it. As unfriendly as it seemed, why can't we be friends?
Why can't we be friends?
But instead, the tape became an attractive nuisance. Stephen picked at it with his fingernails methodically in a mixture of absent-mindedness and what seemed like channeled hostility. The anger was bubbling up in young Stephen. You shall not cross.
My masking tape line.
He concludes, does Jack Schaefer, because I can't take any much more of this than I'm sure you can.
This is perfect.
It is at least poetic that Stephen was bent on building a nonsensical wall even back then, a wall that had more to do with what lay inside him than what lay beyond. He thought he was trying to keep out the chaos of the world when really he was looking for a way to explain away the chaos on his own side of the desk. For that was where chaos had always been. Politico running this. This is supposed to be like a serious outlet for the coverage of political and policy.
And they
politics and policy.
Stephen Miller's third grade classmate.
I mean, are you kidding me?
I could never write that about anybody I went to school with because I didn't really have time to stare into their soul.
You know where this started, though. This is not Stephen Miller's fault.
No.
It's the Brady Bunch.
Oh, why?
Peter.
Love the Brady Bunch.
Peter Bobby Brady.
Oh, the wall in their bedroom, right? You don't cross this part of my
They
bedroom.
Are the originators of the alt-right xenophobic movement that has led us to this dastardly place.
You're just doing that to bug me.
I'm doing it because I happen to like nuts. If it bugs you, leave the room.
It's as much my room as it is yours.
Hey, then you do your thing over there, and I'll do my thing over here. And just so there won't be any misunderstanding. This is your part of the room. This is my part of the room. This is no man's land.
I just like the music.
Great, I love music.
Trevor Church was a genius.
The musical score.
They're trying to annoy each other on each side of the border. It's like Vincente Fox and Donald Trump in the same room.
and it's my TV set.
It's my outlet, and you want to know something else?
I can't hear you through no man's land.
Well, you better listen a lot harder, because this will really interest you.
What?
The bathroom's on my side of no man's land.
No! So you have Peter and Bobby Brady spat that informed generations to explain Stephen Miller, to explain away Trump administration border policy. John in Palatine, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hey, Dan, great sound effects that brought back some good memories on this Monday morning, but were you reading from Jim Comey's book?
Or were you reading from Fifty Shades of Grey?
Jim Comey's book, yeah, Higher Loyalty. I mean, it might as well have been Jim Comey's book, actually. It's kind of funny. Maybe Jack Schaefer is a Jim Comey pseudonym, and he's just pretending he went to third grade with Stephen Miller. You're on Chicago's Morning Answer, anonymous person.
Hey. Hello. Remember Les Nessman from WKRP, and he had the tape down in the imaginary door? I think he's the one that started this.
It's true. Was it Les Nessman or Bobby and Peter? Which came first? Scholars debate.
It's news, opinion, insight. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer.
Dan and Amy, good guys with guns don't get enough profile, so they will always get profile here on this show. This should be a national story. The story, and we didn't get to it last week, so I want to make sure we do. This is the story of David George, who is a pastor. He's a volunteer firefighter in a suburb of Seattle. He received active shooter training, and he had to put it to use in a Walmart parking lot when confronted by a convicted felon who was on a carjacking rampage. Yes. Here's what happened, Pastor George.
George described the chaotic Sunday afternoon when he and his family were shopping about 60 miles south of Seattle.
As a volunteer firefighter, I have also received active shooter training. I was sure that what I heard was gunshots.
Police say 44-year-old Tim Day went on a shooting and carjacking spree. He tried to carjack a couple in the parking lot, critically shooting the driver. George says he then saw Day try to carjack another person, and that's when he shot and killed him.
I carry a firearm for the same reason that I carry a first aid bag, hoping never having to use them, but always being prepared nonetheless.
George is a local pastor and volunteer firefighter and EMT who rushed to help the injured driver, Ricky Feevey. Feevey's son says the Good Samaritan's quick actions saved his dad's life.
That bystander who shot him, I mean, is a hero. That guy could have killed both my parents and plus plenty more people.
Good Samaritan with a gun knows how to use it and is prepared to. And this is instructive for, look, law-abiding families in Chicago, denizens of Chicago out and about with the civilian political authority having lost control of this city and so many other urban centers, but particularly Chicago, as we know.
That is so sad that it wasn't on CNN or NBC Nightly News or
right, but,
ABC.
But you get the gun control advocates from Parkland everywhere,
all the time.
Well,
they're on tour, you know. It's the summertime. They've got 23 stops.
Yeah, literally. Right. Yeah. But this is what we're talking about when we talk about responsible gun ownership, when we talk about protecting yourself and others. This is the story that should be profiled, not, you know, frankly, the children of Parkland.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer. Listen to podcasts of Joe Walsh and Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on the AM 560 mobile app. Download it today at 560theanswer.com/mobile.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. This weekend apparently was the Gay Pride Parade. And for the 49th year in a row, I did not attend, even though I'm not 49.
Really? Okay. Why? You've never been to a Gay Pride Parade? Ever.
No.
Yeah. Well, you don't like parades to begin with.
True.
Whether it's a gay pride parade, an Irish parade.
When I ran for governor, you know how many parades I participated in?
How many?
Zero.
Zero? Okay.
That it's such like a waste of time and resources for, you know, and plus, people don't want to see politicians at parades. So you want to take your kids to the parade to see the fire engine or something like that, fine. I don't want to be in a parade. I don't want to see politicians in a parade. I don't want to see politicians as a matter of course. And so I led by example by not participating.
Well, again, it was quite the scene on the north side in Boys Town.
Everyone be free. Love is love always.
Love is love always.
I just love to be in the ambiance of happiness, love, and acceptance. Yeah. It's overflowing. It's overflowing. I just embody it.
You embody it.
I'm just so excited.
150 floats. There were decorated vehicles, performance groups. This year's theme, Dan, remembering the past, creating the future.
Remembering the past. Right? And I understand that the Grand Marshal was, again, this year, Big Gay Al.
I'm super. Thanks for asking. All things considered, I couldn't be better. I'm a thing. I'm feeling super. Nothing bugs me. Everything is super when you're. Don't you think I look cute in this hat?
That's festive.
No, I always say it's a great day to be gay. That's, you know, why people come down and celebrate.
You always say that?
That's what they always say every time. It's a great day to be gay. People wear flamboyant, off-the-chart costumes.
I think acceptance, you know, just embracing everybody as one, you know. Because, like, if we don't do that, what is living for, you know, if you can't even do that?
Yeah, I don't know what she's talking about.
My point of contention is this. We as a resident are held hostage.
Oh, here it goes. Nope. Oh, no.
We are held hostage in our neighborhood because things shut down early. So we can't get out of our neighborhood unless we drive a mile out to the highway, to 9094, to the Kennedy. We can't get back in because Belmont's closed at Lakeshore. Addison's closed. Uh-huh. Irving Park's closed. Montrose is closed. Wilson was closed. And even parts of Lawrence were closed yesterday because they had 150 floats, so they had to stretch out into our trip. All right. It is a safety issue.
Yeah.
I just want to know, why can't the Gay Pride Parade be like every other single parade in the city? Every parade now is held on Balboa Drive near Columbus.
No, it's Southside Irish Parade.
Well, that's whatever. That doesn't draw a million plus people like the Gay Pride Parade is.
Well, all right.
It is a safety issue. It's disgusting. All of our police officers, all the resources are there.
First of all.
And I'm not homophobic.
First of all, for the shame mob, I am not signed on to this proposal to move the parade. So please direct your ire at
Amy.
Number one. Number two, you know, this show is not your personal platform to prosecute local grievances for you and your liberal friends from Lakeview.
312-642-5600. Should the Gay Pride Parade be like 95% of the parades, and that is taken downtown because it is a safety issue?
Mm-hmm.
It is. Then there's garbage everywhere. There's vomit. The worst part was yesterday by the time we finally
got near
the Jacobson household, there was a woman with her flappy pancakes things hanging out.
Whoa, hello.
And she had put in a Sharpie, black Sharpie, X's over the T-Day part of the boobies.
Okay.
And her flappies were just hanging out there. And poor little Eli said, "Oh, Mom, look. Oh, my gosh. She's naked." And I turned and I looked.
And
I said, "Yes, and that should be covered up." I mean, nobody needs to see that. It's like 12-year-old boys. And I just think, bring it downtown like everybody else.
Wait till they're 50-year-old men.
But, of course, Mayor Emanuel was there.
Well, this is not only a time to reflect, but a time to renew our commitment to inclusion.
Turn. There is a season. Right. I got it. So here's the thing. I think it's ideal. The nice thing the parade provides for young men like Eli. Mm-hmm. Is you get to see what a grown man looks like wrapped in saran wrap and nothing else. And I think that's a real educational opportunity. You get to see a Bruce Rauner walk around in buttless chaps. You get to see a J.B. Pritzker with a diaper and a bonnet on.
J.B. Pritzker was there. Wasn't wearing a diaper or bonnet. Other people were, though. And then white Speedos.
Well, sure, of course they are.
White Speedos.
It's David Gurr.
Potato spuds in there to, you know, make it look bigger than it is. But Pritzker
was potato?
The potato spud.
Ralph and Rantoul, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Yeah, Amy, maybe baby carrots.
Sure.
You know, I'm wondering when Big Candy is going to take their slogan back. I want to taste the rainbow reclaimed by Skittles. I also think that when you have that, like Amy, you're talking about your boys, being subjected to public nudity. If people did that in parks, I think they get arrested for indecent exposure,
right,
and they get put on the sex offender list for a few years.
Yes.
So why it's tolerated in a parade on a float, maybe it's the rainbow and the pom-poms and, well, all that pride that's out there. So
thanks.
It's a little too bad.
Thanks for the call, Ralph. By the way, and tolerance and acceptance and all that, by the way, Chick-fil-A, get out of this city.
I just got a text from one of my law enforcement friends that, Amy, there were fights all over the place, 300 at Hamlin Park alone.
Yeah, but they're slap fights.
Nothing on the news.
Yeah,
nothing on the news.
Yeah, but I mean, they're like slap fights.
No, silly. No, you stop it. No, you stop.
Yeah.
You silly little filly. Speaking of filly, here's Pritzker. And by the way, as if the Candyman couldn't get any bigger, have you seen the full frontal body shot on Pritzker lately?
Was he?
He's like in Chris Christie territory.
Was he passing out fudge along the parade route?
I don't know. He was walking, though.
There he is on the parade route.
He did buy almost $800 of candy from a candy store in Chicago, but nobody's talking about
fudge.
That. Fudge, right.
Yeah, that's his preference.
Here's Fudge Man.
Feels like great progress to have so many politicians of both parties engaged in this. But I must say, many of them are late to the party here.
Yeah.
Late to the fight.
That's
oh,
right.
They're late to the fight.
Spalding was wearing a G-string at the gay pride parade before it was cool.
Governor Rahner was there with his wife beaming behind him.
It's a great tradition. Today we celebrate equality.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ha! Gay!
The more you listen, the more you'll know. This is Chicago's Morning Answer.
Morning Answer.
On AM 560, The Answer.
You know what? I want to tell you, my friends that are gay
cannot
stand the gay pride parade because they said it perpetuates the stereotype that they're all, you know, half naked, wear makeup. Like, real gay people don't wear makeup.
Like, well, okay. some real gay people do, but the idea, like, right, it's a caricature, so... Like, there's not gay professionals and people that would never be seen engage in the antics that are on display at the parade. No doubt about it.
Also, a text message saying, this begins right after the parade. It happens every year. It's disgusting. People are passed out. The parade has to be moved to Columbus Drive.
I have an alternate suggestion from a texter. Hold the parade in Inglewood or Austin. One, it would move much faster. Two, could be promoted as economic development. Three, there would be some real fights in the parks. I think that's a good one. Sean from Elmwood Park, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
First of all, Amy, tell your lesbian friends from the North Shore, I dig it. Number two, Prof, how are you possibly going to pick out Louis Gutierrez, Rahm Emanuel, and Chewy Garcia at the Gay Pride Parade? What are they, on the Willy Wonka factory float with their crashless jumpsuits on?
Yeah.
Come on. And the Cook County Commissioner?
They have
Wiggly's there too.
Their Speedos are a reflective of their national heritage. So, like, you know, Louis Gutierrez says the Puerto Rican flag.
Did you say Quigley's there too? Of course
yeah,
he is.
Quigley's
him and
there.
Pete Silvestri are on the unicorn with the Pat Benatar bandanas on. Of course they're there. It's one giant freak show. I love it. But I'm born in the late 60s, Prof. All of you people born after me look gay. Look across at the producers. It looks like a naked Twister contest to me in there. Just the lesbians. Let's separate it so I could tune in, okay?
All right. Thanks for the call, Sean. But you may want to tune in a
you
little
might
closer
wanna...
to... Yeah, well. All right. It's going to switch gears. Canada is making some history, and that's not something we can often say.
Why? Because they've legalized marijuana.
That's exactly
marijuana.
Why. The only the second country in the world and the first G7 nation to move legislation to permit a nationwide marijuana market. I mean, nine states in the District of Columbia allow it in this country, and it's becoming more accepted. More states are coming online. Illinois probably not far behind, but nationally in Canada. And so our friend Robert Badgley wrote a new Canadian national anthem.
Oh, he did?
Now, he's a lyricist. He's sort of the captain to my tenille. Oh, and so...
Donnie to your Marie.
I would like to now sing this for you, if I could.
Oh, dear. You're going to sing? Everybody, please turn up your radio.
The new Canadian national anthem in honor of national marijuana legalization in Canada. Cannabis... our new national leaf. True patriot buds to counter our ennui. As eyebrows fall from Trudeau's face, we chalk it up to weed. Oh, Canada, America's hat, we light a bowl for thee. Pot pay our debts and stoke our GDP. Oh, Canada, we light a bowl for thee.
A bowl for thee.
Oh, Canada, we light a bowl for thee. Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
There's only one radio show in Chicago talking about today's biggest stories and telling you what they really mean. That show is this one. Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Dan and Amy, I'm getting a lot of positive reaction to my pipes. I can tell.
Oh, Justin, Justin's, the phone lines have opened up and you're getting all these text messages.
Justin's a little jealous. Let's be.
Wait, you know what? I think your agent's on line one.
Desmond Clark.
Oh, your new best friend.
Yeah, I mean, the tight end great from the Chicago Bears.
Mm-hmm.
Just tweeted, my man, that's me. I'm his man. You hear that? Was just singing live on the radio. Be happy you missed it. He's obviously just, you know, having fun at my expense.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Because you did such a great job.
Well, I do appreciate Rob Badgley for the lyrics.
Yeah.
Those lyrics were creative.
But did you take music class?
Obviously.
Oh, obviously not. Your timing's a little off.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. Here's what I say. No shirt, no shoes,
no
conservatives, no service. No problem. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. 64636DA, turnkey.pro text line. Do you have a problem with Lexington, Virginia's Red Hen and their denial of service to Sarah Sanders?
Well, personally, I think it's despicable and it's embarrassing. And I felt bad when I read the story, especially the one that was in the Washington Post where they interviewed Stephanie Wilkinson. You call her Red Wilkinson. She went to Dartmouth, has a BA from Dartmouth, and she has this farm-to-table restaurant it's a very small setting, 26-seat restaurant. Sarah Sanders was in there with her husband. He made the reservation, so it was under his name. And they had six other people with them. And the owner was called by the chef and said, you need to get over here. Sarah Sanders is here, and we don't feel safe.
We got a stage four clinger.
We got a stage four. Yeah, we got a stage four clinger. And so she drove over there valiantly to see what was going on so she could see for herself that Sarah Sanders was there.
And she had to conduct a makeshift plebiscite to pass out little shards of paper. Everybody write down yes or no. Sarah Sanders has to go. They voted. The kitchen staff says she has to go. So then she walked out and told Sarah Sanders to hit the skids.
Well, she took her to the patio. She said, excuse me, hi, I'm the owner. Whatever. Let's go talk on the patio. And she told her that, you know, we don't believe in the same morals, different morals.
So get the hell out of here. And Sarah Sanders says, fine, we'll go.
Yeah, but they already had their cheese board out and their drinks ordered.
Whoa.
So they were moving into the ordering stage when she just told her to get up. Now, she told the restaurant owner, said, you guys can stay. Sarah has to leave. But they're, you know, pound sand. They just got up quietly and left.
Red Wilkinson told the Amazon Post, I'm not a huge fan of confrontation. I have a business, and I want that business to thrive. However, this feels like a moment in our democracy when people have to make uncomfortable actions and decisions to uphold their morals, calling the actions on immigration of the Trump administration inhumane and unethical. And so, you know, my business, and we don't want to do business with you. Okay.
But the reasoning is so ridiculous. She went on to say more than half of my staff is gay, and Sarah Sanders supported Trump, you know, and not letting transgenders into the military. She also brought up, this community is deeply divided over such issues as Confederate flags. I mean, it's a hot mess.
Well, it's
but
just,
is it her? So does Sarah Sanders, and I've asked you this before, and so have our listeners, does she have a lawsuit against
a legitimate one, no. And this is, of course, happened to Kristen Nielsen, the Homeland Security Secretary last week. She's kind of booed out of a restaurant. She leaves.
Highbrow Mexican restaurant. They came in and shamed her out of there.
Pam Bondi went to see Won't You Be My Neighbor, the documentary on Fred Rogers. And there was a lot of patrons at the theater who said, no, we won't be your neighbor and we want you to leave the theater. She's the Attorney General of Florida, Trump supporter. She got booed and catcalled out of the theater. President
Obama decision, not Pam.
I think they're talking about in the context of immigration.
Wow.
But she's, perhaps suing on Obamacare, too, though. You're right. And so she's escorted out of the theater by cops. DHS deputy director, issuing a memo over the weekend to Homeland Security personnel saying because of credible threats that we've received, DHS employees should be on sort of high alert respect to their with respect to their lives generally, because a lot of public information about DHS employees has been put onto social media, the addresses, so people are doxing DHS employees and the like. So what do you think? Should we pretend to be civil to one another, effort civility, or should we just get this thing on? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 64636-DA, turnkey.pro text line. Megan on the south side, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hi, guys. I agree with you, Dan. Let's get it on. And no conservatives should go to that restaurant ever again.
Yeah. Thanks for the call, Megan. So, the whole question of should we protest or just patronize other establishments, look for restaurants owned by conservatives, for example, to patronize, as opposed to making a big stink over Red Wilkinson's place. Just don't go to Red Wilkinson's place.
Redhead.
And what's happened to her Yelp standing?
Oh, it went from, it's at 2 stars right now because people are piling on. People that never have been to the restaurant have a comment to make.
Well, and also, too, do you want a restaurant, you're going out to have a family dinner or whatever, going out with friends, going out to dinner. Do you want that to be a place of confrontation? Do you want, if you're a conservative, to fear that somebody in the kitchen may
spit in your food, maybe?
Right. Well, something along those lines, if they find out, since we're, looking to brand everybody.
Sarah Sanders tweeted, Saturday, because the word had gotten out, that she politely left. Her actions say far more about her than about me. I always do my best to treat people, including those I disagree with, respectfully, and will continue to do so.
Linda in Bloomingdale, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hey, Danielle, I agree with you that patrons, people who own establishments have the right to not serve or whatever, like Sean from Elmwood Park. But isn't that what the brown shirts did? I don't believe in the heckling. I mean, in your face, you mentioned Pam Bondi this morning, and she was on Fox. She was heckled and sworn at and an inch from her face. She said she did not leave. She saw the movie and she left the door. She came in. She said she would not be bullied.
Oh, well, okay. But, there's video of her, being escorted out by about half a dozen police officers as people are screaming at her.
That, yeah. That's true. That was when it was over.
Yeah, okay. All right. Thanks for the call, Linda. Appreciate it. One potentially beneficial result of all of this, as the Wall Street Journal opines today, how to reelect Trump. Oh. We've talked about this on a number of scores, but the left overreach, the hysteria, the fact-free bigot baiting, all you're doing is driving people to Trump. The message, writes the Journal with this Red Hen incident, now you're so deplorable they won't serve you in their restaurants. So it just fans the flames of that whole deplorable brand that Hillary Clinton tagged Trump supporters with. And how did that work out for her? John in the North Side, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Yeah, good morning. I just want to make sure I'm following this argument. Our president's Donald Trump. This guy holds rallies all around the country where they still talk about the woman that lost the last campaign, telling everyone to lock her up. When she was running, they sold shirts and had chants, Trump that B, I'm going to be nice on your show. And now we're going to worry about civility and fall on our fainting couch. And
no, I'm not. No, no. No, no, you're wrong,
okay,
John. So listen.
I'm not following.
Yeah, here's it. Dispense with the false civility. That's what I'm suggesting. Dispense with it. So are you on board? Are you on board for that?
I think you all did that the last.
I'm sorry. I'm not going to play the tit for tat. Are you on board with this?
You are. That's what you're doing.
John,
do not
interrupt me.
It.
Do not interrupt me. I'll let you speak. You're not going to talk over me.
That was rude.
Exactly. So you are going to dispense with the civility because you can't even let somebody else say a sentence and have a discussion because you're an intolerant leftist goof. Thanks for the call, John. How's that for dispensing with the civility? This is exactly what I'm talking about, that exchange. You want to bring it? Let's bring it. You want to get this on? Let's get it on. Straight away. However hard you want to come at me, come right back over you. Right back over the top on you. My point is to say, look, I'm all for debating societies. I could sit around and watch Firing Line for 48 hours straight over a weekend and be, you know, like a pig in slop, okay? But that's not what this is anymore. And yes, is Trump intemperate sometimes? And do you have some silliness happen at his rallies and so forth over the course of a couple of years? Sure. How would you be reacting if people were being thrown out of restaurants and chased out of movie theaters? And it was,
that's,
you know,
not
one
a
of,
life I want to live in.
One of your leftist icons, John. What would you be saying? That would be exactly what you get from the leftist politicians. The crocodile tears over the lack of civility, but they have no problem. Former CIA director has no problem comparing Trump's immigration policy, which Jay Johnson, the Homeland Security Secretary under Obama, admitted this weekend on Wallace's program is just an extension of the policy they had. No problem does General Hayden have comparing the Trump policy to a death camp at Auschwitz. But you're interested in civility, right? You're interested in high-level discussions. Here's the bottom line, my bottom line on this. This is a street fight. It's a street fight.
Well, then you have Congresswoman, you know, Maxine Waters saying absolutely we should harass White House officials.
Keep going.
Already, you have members of your cabinet that have been booed out of restaurants.
Yay!
Who are protesters taking up at their house.
Yay!
Who's saying no peace, no sleep. No peace, no sleep. And guess what? We're going to win this battle because while you try and quote the Bible, Jeff Sessions and others, you really don't know the Bible. God is on our side.
Yay! And what would a dope like John from the North Side be saying if a Republican had said God is on our side, a conservative said God is on our side, compared to No Justice, No Peace Maxine, who's celebrating all of these antics and protestations and picketing and doxing and all the like. Anything goes. So I say again, unfortunately, this is not a debating society anymore. This is not John Kenneth Galbraith versus Bill Buckley. I'd be happy if it was, but it's not. And I'm not going to pretend that it is. So you want a street fight? People like John from the North Side and others, then let's do this. And the reason that Trump has been successful politically is because he's a street fighter. However, you know, unseemly I find him from time to time, he's a street fighter. And the Republican Party, even at the national level, has had generations of cake eaters versus the left street fighters. And that has been, now the battle's been joined, thanks to Trump and Trump supporters, the deplorables who don't believe, who shouldn't be served at restaurants because they're so deplorable and inhumane and intolerant and unethical. You want this fight? Just like on college campuses and everywhere else? Then let's have the fight. Let's fight it out. I prefer rhetorically, but if you want to bring it to a different level, then let's bring it to that level. Not a problem. Bill on the north side, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hey, good morning. You know, I was listening to Left Wing Radio, I think it was a few months ago, when the Supreme Court actually had the ruling on the Baker versus the gay couple in Colorado.
Right.
And just the exact flip around where the left are screaming that, you know, how can you deny service to somebody? It's so unethical. And I was listening to left wing media this morning, and they were all proud of this redhead, how she's a patriot and a fighter for democracy. I mean, it's just self. They're just self imploding. They don't even have a view anymore.
No, that's right. Thanks for the call.
On CNN this morning, there was a celebratory mood. Like, yes, she got kicked out. This is great.
Yeah, I mean, both sides do a little bit of that Groucho Marx return. These are my routine. These are my principles. If you don't like them, I have others. But, I mean, the leftist hypocrisy is rank. And, again, Jay Johnson over the weekend, he's the only honest man that was apparently a member of the Obama administration. At least he talked turkey with respect to immigration policy, the complications of it, the numbers, the data, what their policy was, the same problems that he had in 2014 you're seeing in 2018. That's you can have a conversation with Jay Johnson because he's talking about the substance. If you want to just do the kind of, everybody I disagree with is a Nazi routine, or I'm going to come at you in public, then come at me. Come at me in public. Lee and Hammond.
Yeah, you know, Elijah Cummings over the weekend made a comment that Donald Trump created this whole environment because of his nasty disposition during the campaign. I mean, Elijah Cummings, this is the same guy, like, what was it, 5-6 years ago at a Tea Party rally, claimed that the Tea Party people spit on him and roughed him up, and when you saw the video, it was a complete lie. These people on the left, they're the brown shirts, they're the agitators. Remember, it was Hillary Clinton that called Trump supporters deplorables?
Right.
And yet they expected that the public is going to be dumb enough to actually believe that the conservative party is the one that's aggressive when they're out there breaking windows and harassing people and beating people up.
Thanks for the call, Lee. Holly in Hudson.
Hey, good morning, you two. I want you to know that this is not limited to Trump staff or Trump administration. I have a daughter who's college shopping, and she's an athlete being recruited in one of the colleges or one of the universities, NYU. And she got on, and she's conservative. She did a little research, and she found out that a whole bunch of liberals or progressives went to the first conservative campus meeting or whatever, took pictures of all the kids that were there, and then proceeded to stand outside their dorm all year, followed them to their cars. They had shifts of people following, screaming at them to their classrooms. They went to the administration. The administration basically said, well, you better change what you think. And so this is not limited to just Trump officials.
No,
and
of course
my
not.
My daughter's response, Dan, is like yours. She's like, Mom, I'll just square up. And I don't want her to have that experience in college. But I have to tell you, Williams was on her short list until I watched your Zach Wood interview last night, which was fabulous, by the way.
Thank you. Yeah. No. And he's a sharp kid. But I'll tell you what. But for somebody who has that disposition, it's a great experience to do intellectual battle. That's what I did on the campus of Northwestern. I was hated, but it was a great experience because it just prepares you to do intellectual battle in the real world, too. So I wouldn't necessarily say, you know, you have to go to University of Dallas or Hillsdale. Those are great options and a few others. But one of these small liberal arts schools where you can, take on the established leftist orthodoxy, it can be a great experience for a kid with the right disposition.
She's dying to do it. So I think I'm going to have to let her do it. So I'll get back to you in a year and let you know how.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Thanks, Holly.
Before you see it on TV, share it on Facebook, or read about it in the paper, hear it here first. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer. When you've got questions, he always has an answer. It's Sean Hannity, this afternoon at 2, right before Joe Walsh at 5, on AM 560. The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. Chris Wallace found one honest representative of the Obama administration, their former, the president's former Homeland Security Secretary, Jay Johnson, who was on Fox News Sunday, and you know, own the policy that was extended into the Trump administration until last week's executive order.
Without a doubt, the images and the reality from 2014, just like 2018, are not pretty. And so we expanded family detention. We had then 34,000 beds for family detention, only 95 of 34,000 equipped to deal with families. So we expanded it. I freely admit it was controversial. We believed it was necessary at the time. I still believe it is necessary to maintain a certain capability for families. We can't have catch and release. And in my 3 years, we deported or repatriated or returned over a million people.
They went on to have a conversation about catch and release more specifically with Chris Wallace laying out the data and Jay Johnson saying, yeah, catch and release doesn't work. And, you know, and here's the problem. So here's the problem. He set up the problem, and now, you know, you, President, Congress, go try and solve it because it's complicated.
The practical result of the program that the Obama administration put in was that you had to release. You caught and had to release some of the people with a promise and sometimes an ankle bracelet that they would come back. I want to put up some numbers on the screen because according to government numbers, 74% of those who were released showed up for their hearings last year. But that still left almost 40,000 people who didn't show up for deportation hearings. So catch and release, which is what the practical effect was under the Obama administration and until this year for the Trump administration, that doesn't really work either, does it?
Well, without a doubt, it's a problem, Chris, which is one of the reasons we expanded family detention, which was controversial.
And was knocked down by the court. That's the reason we got this 20-day ruling. It was because of the Obama administration's policy.
Well, we expanded family detention, and then we ran into the issue of the Flores case, which you mentioned a moment ago. I disagreed then with the ruling in the Flores case because I think that our Border Patrol and our immigration enforcement people need those tools available to deal with situations like this. But it's a sheer matter of numbers, Chris. Right now, we have family detention capability for about 3,000 or 4,000 people, and you've got over 1,000 migrants crossing the border a day in Central America. And so even if you emptied it out completely today, it would fill back up in a matter of days.
Right. So there's the law, and there's the infrastructure, and there's the influx. Go. Solve it. And if, frankly, if Jay Johnson was a House Minority Leader, Senate Minority Leader, perhaps you could get a deal with Democrats. If Jay Johnson was running a large media organization, perhaps you would have at least a couple of big outlets that weren't fanning the flames of hysteria, that were actually informing people so you could have an intelligent, substantive discussion about that, which has been largely absent.
And I wish the Democrats had an appetite to do something about immigration.
Yeah, they are going to do something. They're going to demagogue it and try to score political points for the purposes of retaking the House. That's what they're going to try and do. It was interesting, this sort of surprising statement coming out of Hollywood. Twin Peaks creator David Lynch saying Trump could go down as one of the greatest presidents in history because he has disrupted the thing so much, referring to the political establishment. No one is able to counter this guy in an intelligent way, said Lynch, who, by the way, voted for Bernie Sanders in the primary. So it's not like he's a conservative necessarily, but he sees sort of what's happening and perhaps how the left is overplaying their hand with nonsense. For more on these and other topics, we're pleased to be joined by another Hollywood star, Andrew Klavan, screenwriter, essayist, author of the book The Great Good Thing, A Secular Jew Comes to Faith in Christ. Andrew, thanks for joining us again. Appreciate it.
Always a pleasure.
Well, how did you react to David Lynch's rather surprising comments, at least surprising to me?
Well, you know, I think this is actually filtering through, that as Donald Trump, for the first time in a long time, stands up to this media onslaught. Some of his ideas and some of the things that conservatives represent as told by him are getting through. We know that the system has been broken. We saw last week Chuck Schumer shaking a pen at reporters and basically begging Donald Trump to make law from the executive branch because he basically doesn't want lawmakers to be making laws. You know, I think that the Congress has been stuck on this immigration thing for so long that it's embarrassing. It's embarrassing to have Congress begging the president to rule by executive order instead of taking on these difficult issues and compromising and coming to an answer. So I think a lot of people look. What the press has been doing this last week is their old playbook. We saw this years ago against George W. Bush with Katrina, where years of corrupt Democrat governance in New Orleans resulted in a disaster during a hurricane, and it was blamed on George W. Bush. And we all remember Kanye West saying George W. Bush doesn't care about black people, and the press standing in stadiums and blaming him for all the blaming Bush for all the things that had resulted from the hurricane that had nothing to do with him. Now we see the same playbook here. We see crying babies, and it doesn't matter where the crying babies come from. If they can find a crying baby, they tell you it's Trump's fault, whereas you just played, this policy has been in place for a long time, and it's been Congress's fault for not dealing with it. So the big difference here, the only difference we're really seeing is when the hysteria is ramped up, when the crying babies are put in front of the camera, when the charges of racism are screamed, instead of backing down, Trump stands up to them and goes on the offensive. And it's actually been pretty remarkable. It's the polls are sort of showing that Trump has got the people's ear. You know, they're listening. They're saying, well, yeah, we can't have open borders. We do have to do something about it. And it is with the legislative branch to pass law. That's why they call them legislators.
But I think it touched a lot of our heartstrings, you know, as moms when we saw kids being separated from their parents. Like, how did a mom end up in a jail in Seattle and her son end up at a shelter in New York? Now, I know some are put with family members who are in different states, but some aren't. I mean, they're sent to different shelters.
Yeah, well, Abraham Lincoln said the best way to get rid of a bad law is to enforce it. And I think when you have Chuck Schumer accusing the president of enforcing the law, which is essentially what he's doing, he's saying that if you break the law by coming into this country, which is a misdemeanor the first time you do it and a felony the second time you do it, you're going to be incarcerated. A judge's ruling is that you cannot keep children incarcerated with their parents for longer than a certain period of time, so ultimately they get separated. That's not Trump's fault. I mean, I agree with you, Amy. I think that it's terrible that this is happening, that we need a good, compassionate, intelligent immigration law. Law comes out of Congress. That's what their job is. They are the lawmakers. Trump's only job is to execute the law. That's why it's called the executive branch. He's doing that, and it is showing that this law is broken. And I agree with you, the law is broken. But this idea that somehow this is the fault of heartless Republicans, that it's the fault of evil Donald Trump, it's the fault of a Congress which has been sitting on its hands for now 20 years refusing to deal with this because they don't know how to face their constituents. They haven't got the courage to do their jobs. And I just think that, you know, if all these screaming reporters were standing outside the Capitol and screaming at legislators and saying, hey, you know, when are you going to do your job? Instead of this Trump hatred, which is all they've got and something they've been using against Republicans since Reagan. If they would do their jobs and actually research how our laws are supposed to be made, how our government works, how it's not Donald Trump's fault for enforcing the law, it's the legislators for making bad law. They've got to change it. They've got to change it. And look, I don't want to see these children separated either. This is not a matter of pounding the table and saying, oh, you know, forget the children. It's a question of how we make law in this country. This is supposed to be a nation of laws, not a nation of presidents who sign things and issue executive orders like Obama. We don't want a king fixing this. We want our Congress fixing it.
And we don't want a mob driving decision making. And of course, we've seen some mob action over the last week, shaming and driving Kristen Nielsen, Homeland Secretary, out of a restaurant. Seth Rogen celebrating that he refused to take a picture with Paul Ryan's kids. And then obviously what happened with Pam Bondi at a theater in Florida over the weekend. And then Sarah Huckabee Sanders, most notably at this restaurant in Virginia. Dan Hannan, a former British MEP, writes in the Washington Examiner, the worst thing is not the mob, it's the cowardice that we display before the mob. And he essentially argues that the cowardice has been exacerbated by social media. The internet didn't create a problem, but since you can be a a anonymous internet cowboy, it's exacerbating the cowardice and the mobocracy. Do you agree with that? Share his concern?
Of course I do. I mean, it's amazing to me that all we've heard about is the authoritarian Trump, what an evil authoritarian Donald Trump is. And I keep saying to people, if you show me one thing that he has done that is authoritarian, where he has broken the norms of American governance, I will stand opposed to that action. But they can't cite anything where, meanwhile, when they don't get their way, they take to the streets and become mobs. I mean, we saw at Starbucks when two trespassers refused to purchase anything and then defied the police and were arrested. Suddenly, all of Starbucks had to shut down to take sensitivity training. Well, I would like the people at the Red Hen restaurant who threw Sarah Sanders out, I would like them to take some sensitivity training about how to treat people who disagree with you. I mean, this is showing the left, if Donald Trump is doing one thing better than anything else, it is showing us who the left is. They really are not at peace with American governance. They're really not at peace with being answerable to the people. They're not at peace with being answerable to the process. They only want what they want, and if they don't get it, they take to their media, and they take to the streets, and they start committing acts of violence and cruelty. And, you know, when I hear these guys, they can't even express an opinion without using the F word. They can't even express their point of view in a rational, measured way without cursing at people. And listen, I have hit Trump repeatedly for his rudeness and his bullying and his, you know, obstreperous way of talking. But who can blame him at this point when he is facing an entire movement full of bullies?
Maybe we we just need to lower our expectations of Ivy League English lit majors.
So I think it would be nice if they taught them a couple of extra words besides the four-letter ones.
Yeah.
Hey, Andrew Klavan, has anybody treated you differently because of your political standings?
Oh,
well.
Well, I mean, I basically have been shut out of Hollywood in a lot of ways, and I get a lot of this stuff, and it's very difficult for me to work in my profession and actually get work anymore because I am so openly conservative and openly, you know, and express my opinions. The idea is this happens to me all the time. I will walk into a studio, I'll walk into some filmmakers, and somebody will come up to me and drop his voice and say, "I agree with you," in a whisper. And I always say the same thing. Why are we whispering? We are right. We are in the right. We are standing up for the American traditions and the Constitution. I'm not going to whisper it, but yes, you pay a price for it. I mean, there are a lot of people in this town who come up to me, mostly guys in lower-level positions like waiters and drivers, who turn around and recognize me and tell me that they agree with me. But this is a town where if you speak up, you pay a price.
Well, that's the thing. It's not only that we're right. It's that even if you don't think we're right, why should we whisper? We wouldn't expect you to whisper. You know,
that's
we just
right.
stated
that,
straight away.
Not only do we not expect them to whisper, they feel that they have a right to tell us what words we can use, how we can look at things, how we feel about things, and that to say what we say is somehow inherently rude and unkind and racist. And they don't understand they've been insulting us for years, calling us racist, calling men pigs. And when we snap back and send a guy like Trump to send these messages back to them, they suddenly feel that they're not being treated right. Well, they're being treated exactly the way they've treated other people for a long, long time.
He is Hollywood screenwriter Andrew Klavan, of such great books and films like True Crime, essayist, also the author of a book you should pick up, The Great Good Thing, A Secular Jew Comes to Faith in Christ. Andrew, thanks as always for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thanks a lot. Bye.
And joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
It's like a hot, steaming cup of information to start your day. It's Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Summer fun is back in Chicago this weekend before the 4th of July. Head over to the Lyle Eyes to the Skies, Lyle, home of Bennett Academy, to see 20 or more hot air balloons, go for a ride in a balloon, see skydivers and fireworks, a carnival, bands, our team from AM 560, The Answer, and more this Friday, Saturday, and Sunday before the 4th. Get your tickets today and all the details at eyestotheskies.org.
When you were a kid, were you jealous because you grew up in Wheaton? Would you see the balloons in the sky and be like, I want to go play and I want to go on a ride?
No.
No? Never? No. Okay.
If you live in Wheaton, it's not possible to be envious of any other community.
Oh, that's right. Told you about my low Uber rating. found out why it's so bad.
For assaulting Uber drivers.
Well, no, I didn't assault him. I saved him from oncoming traffic because he veered into the other lane.
Not his view.
And I had to grab him.
Yeah. Not his view of it.
Looked, I called Uber because I was very concerned about this. Mm-hmm. It's my, I don't use Uber. I Uber my kids around. I have hardly been personally in a lot of Ubers. So it's Peyton and Eli's fault. Apparently, they're not behaving.
Honestly, that's so so disgusting. You're going to try and blame the kids? You're going to use the kids as a human shield?
It's their fault.
Oh, you're pathetic.
And the fact that I wasn't tipping. Oh. I mean, I'm starting to tip more, and the number's going back up. I'm in the threes now.
I'm sorry, Peyton and Eli. I'm sorry you had to hear that.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.